3, 2, 1. Boom! And we are on. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Renegade Show. And today I have a really special guest with me, Alice. Welcome to the pod, Alice.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So, Alice, I came across your profile on LinkedIn, and two things really stood out to me. One was you're part of this alumni called the Knowledge Society. Mm-hmm. And second, you're in high school and you're building a business. So tell us, how did you get into this?
Yeah, okay. So a little bit of background of me. So yeah, my name is Alice. I'm 16 and I'm from Boston. And in general, I'm just really interested in how we can utilize exponential technologies. So for me specifically, quantum computing and also machine learning for applications in the healthcare, financial, and also the cybersecurity industries. So currently, I've been specifically focusing on implementing different quantum algorithms for areas including like cancer cell classification, protein folding, and also credit risk analysis. And as of right now, I also co-founded a startup called Anaxa that basically tries to combat security hacks and also latency issues by combating like quantum properties and also blockchain into this decentralized platform for saving files and also for secure communication, specifically in the healthcare space. And yeah, I joined TKS, the Knowledge Society, last year. I think that was one of the turning points in my life, because before then, I mean, I've always been curious when I was young. I like to ask a lot of questions, break things apart, and just try to put them together. And really interested in learning all that I can and just discovering more about the world. And I mean, at that time, like before I joined TKS, I knew a little bit of coding. So I knew some Python, I knew some Java, but it wasn't really that much. But after I joined TKS, I was exposed to so many new different technologies that I didn't even know existed, like quantum computing and BCIs and like gene editing. And I also met such a supportive and like-minded community there, and was just surrounded by so many different people who had the same ambitions and goals as me and were like willing to like work together to in order to solve some of the world's biggest problems. Yeah, and so that's really where I've started and where I came from.
And it's really interesting the preamble that you gave around how you got involved with this. And quantum computing is effectively a new paradigm. Mm-hmm. And you're in high school.
Yeah.
And you know, when you think about where quantum computing has started, about the revolutionary way of computing, which is really taking a very different approach to how microprocessors are actually processing it. Mm-hmm. The question I had for you was, how did you first stumbled on this? And then the second thing is, for those who don't really understand the power of computing and how quantum is changing the world, share with us these two different paradigms.
Yeah, definitely. So first, how I stumbled across quantum computing. I mean, originally, I've always been interested in computers. I always thought of coding as like painting. So the notebook is your canvas, and then writing the code is just like painting the images and just creating your own new world. So mm-hmm. I was always interested in coding. And then I came across quantum computing, which was just this like weird version of regular computing. So yes. Instead of using ones and zeros, they can actually use ones and zeros and what's called superpositions of ones and zeros. So you can use zeros and ones simultaneously. And for what quantum computing is, at a very high level, essentially it's just harnessing the laws of quantum mechanics for a lot more efficient processing of information. So two of the properties within quantum mechanics includes superposition and also entanglement. So mm-hmm. superposition is when, okay, let me think of an analogy for this. If you guys heard of Schrodinger's cat, basically you have a situation where a cat is inside this box, and inside there is a radioactive monitor, some poisoning, and a little like release handle that releases the poisoning. So while the cat is in the box, there's a 50% chance that the that the like poisoning will be released, which kills the cat. And there's also another 50% of chance that the poison is not released and the cat is kept alive. So while that cat is in the box, you don't really know what's going on exactly. So the cat is considered to be dead and alive at the same time, as crazy as that sounds. And it's not until after you open the box, which collapses the state, then the cat, you can see if it's dead or alive. So that's the same thing with superposition. In quantum computers, right now for our classical computers, we use what's called bits, so strings of zeros and ones. But quantum computers, we use qubits. So that includes ones, zeros, and also superpositions of ones and zeros. Mm-hmm. And the whole advantage of this is just a lot more efficient processing. So like right now, there's this rule. So 2 to the n, if you have an n qubits, that can represent 2 to the n number of solutions. Mm-hmm. So right now, if you have a 10 qubit quantum computer, you can represent 2 to the 10 solutions all at the same time. So it's just a lot more efficient processing. And in the case, like with what I'm doing with machine learning, if we're able to add quantum computing into that extra layer with machine learning, that can lead up to a lot more efficient processing and just in general, a lot more efficient problem solving.
And this is a game changer because like what you explained, it's either in traditional computing, it's either one or a zero. In this kind of computing, it actually mimics nature, yeah. Right? And so the states can be one and zero at the same time. And some people were calling this neuromorphic computing that actually kind of follows the technology breakthrough. And the reason why I'm trying to understand quantum is because the company that you're building is also driven for a mission. And it actually stems from a very personal experience that you and your family had encountered yourself. So talk to us about building a mission-driven company and what led you to this whole idea of innovation and entrepreneurship.
Yeah, definitely. So for me, my main mission ultimately is to just help other people and to ultimately make an impact on this world, and just the print that I leave on this world would be beneficial and it would be used to help the next generation of innovators. And right now, I think there's currently so many different problems in the world. They include underlying diseases, climate change, food insecurities, like all of that. And there's not really enough people like working on them. So technology itself cannot solve these problems, but instead it's up to the people like you and I to drive these solutions. And technology is just a tool that we use for that. Mm-hmm. And I believe that like everyone, like you, me, all of our listeners out there are just really capable of making some sort of beneficial change or impact to our society. Like, so starting from another individual who like really means a lot to you, to your local community, and eventually just to the whole world. And it's these little things that compound into a huge effect, and ultimately all the choices and paths that you make will like lead to the mark that you make on this world. And like, call me crazy, but like none of us know how we came into this world, like why we're here, where we're going next. But to me, I think that there's a reason we were all brought here. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is to help other people and this world and just leave my mark so that the next generation of innovators can continue to improve this world. And yeah, that's basically where I started from, like for my mission. And I'm sorry, what was your other question?
The problem you wanted to solve, right? You started with security, and because it was a very personal thing to you. So talk to us about that. And then how are you going to take the learnings that you've learned in this new technology? And are you looking to then scale that to other problems, other industries to solve? So start with where you started with this, and then what are you going to do once you've kind of tackled this problem?
Yeah, definitely. So basically for security is a huge, huge problem. There's currently around 80,000 cyber attacks happening per day. So some of them are more harmful than others, but either way, that's huge. And the reason for that is because right now as more and more devices are being added into our internet or network, our network itself becomes like more and more centralized and like server-based, creating some vulnerable lines of communication that can be like easily tapped into. And so for me personally, I've also experienced the problem of security quite a bit. Like one of my family members got his social security number stolen, and that created like so many problems in terms of like IRS and all the costs involved with that, and just the time it takes and also the stress of just getting it back. It's just so much. And I wanted to just take this problem and try to apply it with some technologies that I'm really interested in, including quantum computing and blockchain, in order to help combat these security issues and also latency issues within our networks too, because IoT, the Internet of Things, is just growing and growing, and like more and more companies and individuals are leveraging it. And because of that, security becomes an even bigger problem than it currently is.
Yeah. And with IoT and 5G, technology is going to be ubiquitous. It's going to be in every device, in every house. And to the common person, a smart TV or a smart speaker could potentially pose a great risk to them versus a unlocked computer or laptop. And so how are you, while you're solving this problem, educating people about the idea of being mindful to, while technology is pervasive, it can do good, there's still a lack of security in terms of all these so-called standalone devices that are connected?
Yeah, in terms of education, I like to write a lot of articles and blogs and just spread out the word there. So I write a lot of Medium articles involved with that. And in terms of like, having more and more people like hear about this. I'm currently trying to move my company Anaxa forward. So my co-founder and I were actually part of this startup accelerator program over the summer. And right now we're still in the ideation stage. So we're still doing some more market research and just finalizing our MVP. And hopefully in terms of like getting this out to more people, I'm continuing to write all these like blog posts and like this, talking in other podcasts and trying to educate other people on this problem, and writing newsletters and just reaching out and branching out in those ways.
So how, you know, when we spoke earlier, in order to kind of schedule this podcast, you were mentioning that you were taking driver's ed and you were busy last week. So I want to ask, how are you able to be a teenager, do driver's ed, go to school, have fun, and still build a company? How many hours in the day are you able to do that? Because this is an important question. And the reason why I ask this is a lot of people who were young and then now have gone to work and hold a 9-to-5, but desire to actually be an entrepreneur, can look at the inspiration that you're doing, where you're actually having an education, but at the same time, you're still building a business. So how does one manage your time, and how do you reconcile all of this?
Yeah, definitely. So basically everyone has 24 hours in your day, right?
Yeah.
No one has more, no one has less. So it's fair that way. It's basically just leveraging those hours into what you want to do. So I find time boxing and prioritization to be super, super helpful. So I use Google Calendar. I'll just time box in the hours of the day. So say from 7 to 8 a.m., do some studying for school, and then having school, and then after school from like 4 to 5, doing a deep dive into a new exponential technology and writing an article about it. From 5 to 6, practicing violin. From from 6 to 8, having meetings and just like moving forward with my projects. So I find time boxing to be super, super helpful. And sometimes when that doesn't work, like if I go over time, then I find prioritization to be also really important. So I have a goal that I set for each day. So for example, my goal like yesterday was to read 5 of these material informatics articles because I wanted to learn more about that technology. So I would have a like set goal for like one set goal for each day. And until I could cross out that goal, then I would be able to like go to sleep. And like for me, how I work, I basically have these splurges of motivation. So For example, I would be really motivated in for these first 2 weeks. So every day I'll be just grinding on projects. I'll be working on like what I'm doing. But then the next week I'll feel like, nah, like not too motivated, kind of tired. So I would just say another piece of advice is just listen to your body. So don't try to force yourself to do things on the days where you're just not feeling it. Instead,
the bad days.
Yeah. Instead, use those bad days to relax. So read a book. Like for me, I like to practice music. I play the violin, so I'll do that and just concentrate on other hobbies. But then also for those days where I'm really motivated, just try to leverage that as much as I can and try to take advantage of those days and do as much as I can during that day. So I think for me, a lot of it is just some practices. So prioritization and time boxing, and also just like listening to your body and finding out a schedule that's right for you.
This is interesting because I think a lot of young people believe that 80-hour work week, coding all night, doing the 24-hour run, the 48-hour run, boot camps, things that will actually make a difference. But what the interesting point you're bringing up is you actually have peaks of productivity and then troughs of just downtime, me time, play time, rest time. And you need both of it in order to have a healthy, balanced life. Because I think if I hear you correctly, you're starting very early in your career to build a business and you want to have longevity in this business, right? And if I'm hearing you correctly, if you push, then potentially you're going to wear and tear the machine faster and then reducing longevity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. For me, I feel like there are some grinders out there who are able to go 24/7, just nonstop hardworking. I am not like that at all. For me, I need at least like 8 hours of sleep. Some people can do all-nighters, can just have like 4 hours of sleep and just be totally fine and totally productive the next day. I am not like that. I definitely need my breaks. And I feel like even if you operate like kind of like the grinder, so you're constantly working and you're like okay with that, like you feel fine, I would say it's still really important to just take some time to like spend some time with your family or just go on some walks and just have a little bit of alone time. And also I think reflection time is really good too. So
yeah, let's talk to us about the reflection time, because I think that a lot of people are just so busy, go, 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 that sometimes reflection time is also key in driving self-awareness, because I think some people use it to learn about how to improve or what to not do. Tell us, how do you use reflection time, if any?
Yeah, definitely. So I would have these bi-weekly sessions with myself where I just lock myself in a room, no one's near me, I get rid of my phone and my other electronics, put it in another place. And just for that morning, so usually it'd be like a Sunday morning, the only thing with me is a journal and a pen. So right there, I would just write like anything that comes into my mind. So what I did well this week, what I could have improved on, what went badly. And then from there, just from those results and just seeing my progress and like results from the other weeks of when I was doing my reflection time, from there, just readjusting my goals and my ways of approaching them. Because a lot of the time before I started having these reflection times, I would, for my like time boxing and for all my goals for each day, I would have like so many like lists and lists of goals that I wanted to accomplish that day. And if I didn't get them all done, then I would just get really mad at myself for that. But if by taking that reflection time and seeing like what's working and what's not, you can readjust it to your own system and your own schedule to better optimize it.
How important is it to have a brain trust of people that you can leverage on, or mentors or coaches, especially when you're doing so many things in such a short period? Do you find these sorts of support structure groups helping you?
Yeah, definitely. I think I have a few mentors, both for TKS and for my startup. I think that they are super helpful and also super supportive, because at the end of the day, like, there's still so many things that you don't know, no matter like how much you do, and you're just and the important thing is to just continue to learn. Being in that mindset to constantly learn from other people and also see their perspectives too, because sometimes you're just in your situation, you're blinded by these other situations that you're not really aware of. Like, for all of us, I think that we're living in like a ball or like a fishbowl, and our perceptions of other things around us are a lot different than other people's. So I think that having that network in mentors and also just that support system is super critical in getting those other perspectives and also just learning from them too.
And in terms of your prioritization framework, there's some things that are urgent and there's some things that are important. And then there's some things that are urgent and important. How do you do the difference when you're having to kind of deal with all these sorts of to-do lists and time boxing? Is there a sort of a hack or a technique that actually says, hey, this is urgent, but it's not important, or this is important, but it's not urgent? And then there are things that are both urgent and important. How do you reconcile that? And you know, speak to us in terms of, of your frameworks.
Yeah, so there's actually, you can make a simple 2x2 box, so or like a coordinate plane. So on the x-axis, the first one would be not important and also like important. And then on the y-axis, it would be not urgent and also urgent. So the things that you want to do first are things that are urgent and things that are really important. So in that case, it would be, for example, for me a few weeks ago, like pitch competitions for my company. I think that's really important because it's one action step that I was taking to get to my goals. And also it was really urgent because my pitch competition was also the next day. So I needed time to prepare for that. And then you can start doing not important, but urgent. So in that case, sometimes it could be like schoolwork or for me, it's mainly just schoolwork. I mean, school is important, like you should go to school, but for me, it's not as important as some of my other goals. So sometimes I do that later than what like I want to do, like in terms of my companies and also all of my projects. Right. And then from there, for those, the other one, not important. Wait, we already talked about not important and urgent. Yeah. So the other one, not urgent, but not important, don't do that. Like, that's a waste of time.
Right.
And then same for the other one too. But basically, if you're able to, like what I do, I draw that 2x2 box. And then I just like I basically divide my to-do list and then put them into those boxes and see like, okay, which ones should I prioritize first? Which ones do I need to get done? And I feel like that type of organization is just super helpful in decluttering what's in my head and just prioritizing in general too.
So as we wind down the episode, we've got a lot of people listening to this podcast. Are you looking for investors? Are you looking for people to join you as employees? What are you looking for as you build this business?
Yeah, so right now I'm currently looking for industry professionals within the cybersecurity space. I think that would be super helpful because my co-founder and I don't have a ton of that practical experience, and we would love to hear some feedback and also some of the advice that like you would have. And also anyone just working in the healthcare space, we're still doing some market discovery and some market research and getting like feedback on our MVP. So that would be super, super helpful.
Okay. And what's your advice to all the young renegades out there listening in third world countries who may not necessarily have access to incubators or support venture capital like you and other folks in North America actually may have access to, but are interested in actually pursuing their dream of making a dent in the universe? What do you say to these young renegades listening out there?
Definitely. So my advice is to just keep on learning. Whatever you're interested in, just I don't know, set a time each day where you can just focus on doing that. So half an hour, 1 hour, depending on your schedule and what you want. Just spend some time learning about that subject every day. And also just taking any opportunities that you have around you and leveraging them and not giving up, having that persistence. Like, sometimes it's hard, but it's better to take risks and fail, but it's not okay to like not try at all. So taking risks and also accepting failure as learning opportunities and just keep on persisting.
Great. Thank you, Alice, for coming on the Renegade Show, and we wish you all the best in building your business.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.